Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, October 5th, 2012. Carla L. Reichert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the websites llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
We're doing well.
Just fine. How are you?
Well, you would ask that. Could be better. I've been wrestling with a plumbing problem for a week now, and just found out they're going to turn my water off because it's still leaking. And I told them, you know, I'm trying to fix it, so I don't quite get that. But yeah, so could be better.
Yes, it could.
But, yeah, I'm just hoping it's not going to end up in the thousands of dollars. But one of those things, I guess, chalk it up to more catalyst, I guess. Sometimes you wonder why these things happen, and it seems so needless sometimes.
I'm into that.
Yeah. Do y'all have any announcements or anything you want to talk about before we get started?
No announcements. I had a terrific party this afternoon. I went, they came here, my three best girlfriends in town. Well, they're not actually in town. They're in Kentucky and southern Indiana. But one of them has to drive a couple of hours to see us. Another has to drive about an hour to see us. And then one has to drive a mere, 30 or 40 minutes. So it takes a while to set this up. But set it up, we do. And it's so nice to have the girlfriends around and to have some girlfriend time. I don't think there's anything on this earth that equals the support that you get from your girlfriends. Men try their best, they do their darndest to support you, and sometimes you're just looking at them and thinking, why did you think that was going to help? But anyway, it was so good, and we even had a pear tart, which was delicious, and fixed for the birthday girl, not me this time. Another of my friends, Diane, had a birthday today. So we just had a lot of fun. How about you? Oh, well, I got to tell you this. I have a feeling that I kept Jim out of the room because, we share a room now. And I saw his truck pile up, and I thought, done a little bit early. And and he was out, maintaining the mowers for a while, and then I heard him in the other room, and I thought, I know he wants to get in here. But the girls needed to stay as long as the girls needed to stay. And he was all supporting that and everything. But, Jim, what did you do to pass the time?
Oh, I'm bringing in our houseplants. We have a chance of frost on Sunday night. So we have a lot of houseplants that have been outside. We do that every summer, put them outside, let them get the sun and the rain. And I started bringing them in. Hopefully over the weekend I'll get them all in. We probably have about 50 or so. Once they're in the house, we have two or three rooms that look like jungles.
It's so true.
Wow. You getting a frost already? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a threat of it. We probably won't, but you don't want to take the chance. And,
right.
Referring to the feeling like a jungle, we had a friend of my brother's, a good bit younger, and he is responsible for the sound at the Kentucky Center for the Arts. So he's sensitive, I guess, to, you know, place and presentation and so forth. He comes into the living room and sits down, and he goes, you need sound effects for this jungle. I didn't realize, just, you know, how overpowering it was until then. But, you know, Jim has such a green thumb that a plant would never think of dying. I mean, you can bring it to him and it's on its last leg. You know, it's all wilted and it won't show a flower for, you know, anything. And Jim will just, you know, very carelessly toss some water at it. You know, it starts, you know, wanting to help him and it just perks right up. It's amazing. So we've had a lot of our plants for a long, long time. I think probably several of them since 1975. So you can imagine that they're rather overgrown and mature. We keep giving them bigger pots, you know. That one asparagus fern is definitely that old.
Oh, yeah, 35 years old.
Yeah. So anyway.
Okay. Did you say asparagus?
Asparagus
fern.
Fern.
It's, but the edible asparagus, or is
no.
that?
No, the leaves look like an asparagus plant.
You know,
but they never. There's never any asparagus there.
Oh, okay. Because I've got an asparagus patch, so that's what got my attention. Okay. Well, I'll have to send you over to my house, Jim, and see if you can doctor some of my plants that are a bit ailing. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and go to the riff for today. This is from Kuo from Thursday. Let's see. Well, no, that's okay, Thursday. It's dated Thursday, but the actual session is from January 1st, 1996. We feel at this point the comfortable awareness that we do not know what is occurring. We only know how to be faithful to love. When it is accepted within the heart that nothing can be known and that a sea of confusion will always surround love, then the mind and the heart are better armed to take up the walk of the pilgrim who seeks truth, peace, and love. That call has come to many who wander within this world of yours at this time, listening for a sound, a tone, a letter from home, waiting, hardly hoping at some times, yet holding on to the faith that that which is within, that which is so hungrily sought, does exist. And we say to you, yes, love exists. Love is before, after, and around all that is. You do not seek after ephemera. You seek that which is and that which exists perfectly. We encourage all lines of thinking which fascinate your minds. And we hope that we can, within your meditative periods, be with you as strengtheners of your own vibration. But we do continue to remark that the ways of seeking, which are scholarly and of the mind, yield a limited harvest.
Thanks, Monica. I like this because it's just so easy to think that it's necessary to know something. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with trying to know something. I think it's great. Every book you read, every movie you see, every article you read in the newspapers or a magazine, everything that comes into your mind is fodder for it. And you could use it as you will. And, you know, depending on what you are feeding your mind, you know, you'll have a different sort of creation that's inner to you. And so it's better by far to be reading in spiritual things. If you're trying to connect with your own spirituality, than it is to become totally involved in something else, because where your mind is, there your heart shall be also. But no matter how much you read, no matter how many times you sit down to analyze that which you have read, to analyze what it has meant to you, what your perception of it has done as it flows into your network of perceptions, the better off you are. You're always gaining intelligence, and the best way is to gain your own intelligence, not someone else's. So, dear seekers, read, read, and read some more. But please know that as you seek, as the Kuo group said so poignantly, a sound, a tone, a letter from home, entering the silence is the very best way to go. And when you have entered that silence, you have come into that place of love, which is indeed surrounded by the illusion that's outside of us. It's very difficult to connect with the same quality of love within your seeking through intellectual pursuits. Not that intellectual pursuits don't yield a good harvest, but that the silence can often yield an extravagant harvest, a harvest so rich and so beautiful that you wonder, wow, is that my perception? That's amazing. You know, something will seize your mind all of a sudden. You have an epiphany. You know, a lot of people don't know that they're wanderers, and they're wondering why everything is so difficult. And then they read our material, and they go, this makes sense. This is my experience. And I just feel I probably am a wanderer. I've been elsewhere, and now I'm here, and that's why it's difficult, and that's why I feel isolated. But the joy of that is that once you know that you are a wanderer, once you've jumped out of the box in some way or another, so that your thinking is not limited by what other people think, you can find much more out about who you are and where you're going. It's okay to have the sea of confusion in your life. It's sometimes difficult, and it's always a bit uncomfortable. You can't control that sea of confusion. You can't control the things that Fox News says or that any other news station says. You can't control the flow of the buzz, the things that people think are wonderful this year. You know, we always have the hula hoops and the coonskin caps. You know, I'm not saying that they will make a comeback. I'm saying that they are fads that happened to me when I was a child, and I watched people, very nice people, put on coonskin caps. No kidding, and they're wearing them around, and grandmothers, you know, doing the hula hoop thing, and it was just, you know, it's just wild how people grab onto a fad and really try to do the best they can with it. And who knows but what an epiphany can come to those people. But it's encouraging it to move into the silence. I think that a lot of times you're going, I don't know what faith is. Well, you have to find out what it is by acting as though you had faith. And since that statement brings on a good half hour of discussion, I will just leave it at that. But I just want to encourage everyone to seek that silence. Set your intention. I am going into the silence because, fill in the blank, you really need to be very self-aware as you're setting your intention so that it'll work. You set your intention, this is what I wish, this is what I wish from the silence. And then, you know, you move out of the sea of confusion into the silence in which faith and love exist bountifully. And you come back out of that house of prayer, as many have called going into the silence. And because your thinking is different and influenced by the silence, you find yourself looking at the world in a whole different way. That's really one of the greatest things about going into the silence regularly, is that it does change your perceptive web in a very good way. You can't really explain it, of course, because there are no words. But it just says here, we encourage all lines of thinking which fascinate your minds. And I think that is a statement of completely do what thou wilt is the whole of the law, as Aleister Crowley said it. It's fine to seek in whatever way that you want to seek, but know that it is your joining of yourself to the silence that will be the most fruitful of your studies. They say that we hope that we can, within your meditative periods, be with you as strengtheners of your own vibration. They don't want to put anything on you. They just want to act as a carrier wave so you can hear yourself, so that you can feel yourself within that place of love. So you're not going into the silence to get a message from Kuo. You're going into the silence because love is in the silence. And you will find that love not in books, although some books are so sweepingly beautiful, some poetry is so incredibly lush, that it's like taking a piggyback into the silence, and it's a wonderful thing. But for the most part, those ways which are not beginning in the silence are those ways which make the path the longest. Mickey, do you want to have any corrections, amendations, or comments?
I think one of the things that Ross suggested was to ask where love is in the moment. Some moments can be very difficult. But every moment does contain love, and if you can focus on that, then I think that that's the way to handle the catalyst in the very most skillful way. So, like Carlos says, just remember that love is the goal, love is the means, and love is that from which everything is made.
Okay, quick question. The very last sentence, I'm assuming the use of the term harvest is not referring to the harvest.
No.
You know, okay, it's more like fruitful. It's not going to be as fruitful. As...
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
that's what I thought, but I thought I better... thought I would clarify that in case anybody else was wondering that.
Yeah. Yeah, that January 1st. Yeah, we work New Year's Day, we work Christmas, we don't care. We just go ahead and keep our schedule. When it came in, the question was one where I think that they had to talk themselves around a bit to get to this discussion here, and it's very interesting how they do that, whereas, you know, people who think in a linear fashion would think, well, you can't get from that point to the point you need to get to. And then they just do it and they make it look so easy. So it's worthwhile reading the whole January 1st, 1996 session if you've got a mind to.
Okay. I have to go check that out. Okay, our first question tonight is from Sirson. Actually, the second question that he or she had posted a couple of weeks ago. Hi, Carla. Another question. Hope it's okay to post too. What do you make of the concept that this dimension reality we inhabit is actually an almost fixed STS dimension, that service to self is the natural state, and that to become STO, you must graduate the harvest into another reality where it is an STO dimension? I have pondered the thought, and the more you break it down, the more it seems possible that even the most apparent STO actions could be rooted in an STS foundation. Example, when you help someone else, regardless of your genuine intention, there is a payoff for you. You feel good that someone was helped. There's a chemical reaction within that causes feelings of pleasure. So really, that act has become rooted in your desire to feel good about yourself, hence an STS action. I would think that acting in an STO way is definitely still possible if this idea is true, but it would become more of a conscious effort to achieve it, as in you really have to work on yourself and your motivations to ensure that you have zero self-interest in offering help to others, so to speak. What are your thoughts on this? Thanks again. Best wishes, Sirson.
Well, sir, gotta have a nickname, right? So, it's an interesting question, and parts of it are almost true. They're true in the sense that this almost happened, at least according to the readings from the Kuo group. According to them, and I didn't find the places on. In our database where you can see this discussion, but yeah, I think if you look up the term space pirates, you'll find some interesting information. At any rate, what they said was that there was a large contingent of service to self from elsewhere that were from the inner planes of this planet and from elsewhere that had collaborated to create a very interesting proposition for everybody. And that was only because a service to others idea was, they could see the possibilities of using a service to others idea in a service to self way. Now, the service to others entity, the Confederation of Planets, thought that perhaps, you know, if we went on a time shuttle, and the time was stretched a little bit, there would be more subjective time that in which people could find the truth, wake up, and become harvestable. And that time ended, or will end soon, at the when the planet goes into fourth density on the winter solstice of 2012 or somewhere around there. So it was really important that we get on board and make that not happen, because what the service to self entities wished to do was to create such an acceptance of suffering and death that they would feel that it was their duty to put themselves in harm's way for seemingly very good reasons. Sounds good on paper. Although, as Ali said, those Vietnamese didn't do anything to me. And I think that those in many of the recent wars, you know, you could have people that could say, well, they didn't do anything to me, although, of course, 9/11 sort of puts a shadow on that. But the service to self entities wanted to keep that shunt from turning back into the normal timeline. And if they had done that, it would have become precisely what Sirson suggested, that it would be an almost fixed service to self dimension. It would be out of line with the timeline, and it would simply be a place in which mothers felt that their sons should go to war for good reasons, and that leaders felt that it was important for the nation state that they go to war, and they called on people and created this constant feeling of fear and suffering and death. And then, of course, you reincarnate and you do it all over again. It's very difficult to break out when, you know, you've broken from the timeline and it's sort of its own little being. I'm happy to say that this did not happen, that already, even though we see the dragon thrashing its tail, as George Hunt Williamson channeled long ago, they haven't won, they've lost. There are too many people that are hip to the fact that fear, suffering, and death in and of themselves are not noble things, and that it is much, much more important to question the reasons to go to war instead of use diplomatic avenues of creating our political safety. Just about anything can be talked out. When you've got people that are really wanting to talk things out, even if there's a tremendous amount of service to self involved. I'm thinking of the Yalta Conference in 1945. I believe it was 1945, and there was Stalin, and was it the French that had a person there? And then, of course, Winston Churchill. And they were planning out things, and I mean, there were fights about who was going to sit in what chair. I mean, it seemed like more and more and more it wasn't going to happen. But by golly, because they just needed to get this to happen, and because they had some very good talkers who, you know, weren't going to be swayed from making it happen. I'm thinking of Churchill, a marvelous speaker. It was all worked out, thank God, and World War II was shortened by their work there. And you know, that was people that at least had a huge amount of ego involved, and yet they were able to band together in a service to others way, because they all saw the necessity of either doing that or crashing and burning singly or together. So I think that more and more people want that possibility of people talking it out and people being generous with each other instead of bitterly accusing and paranoid. It would be very good if that were so. But you see, the paranoia is encouraged by such things as the daily amber alerts and red alerts and whatever other. You never hear that there's a green alert. Nobody says, there's no problem today. Go about your business. You're always hearing, oh, well, it's an amber alert because so-and-so, they're looking at, you know, the honor duty of soldiers across the ocean dying in faraway places and so forth. I'm minded of something that George Bush with the W said one time in a large meeting, and he had invited this woman who had lost her husband and three sons. And fortunately for her, she had had about, I don't know, twice that many children. And at one point, Bush held her up and introduced her as if she'd done a wonderful thing simply by, you know, donating these young boys and her husband to the cause. And a little while later in this discussion, he was challenged as to why people would go on with that for so long, and he said no. He said that wonderful mother would absolutely be happy to sacrifice the rest of her children. And they put a camera on her as he said that, and you should have seen the look in her face. Of course, she couldn't say anything, but her face said it all. At any rate, that's an example of just how ingrained the empire point of view has eaten into our ability to speak with each other and to develop trust with each other. Mickey, go for it. I'm sure you've got something to say here.
Well, I would just focus on the last sentence in Susan's question. That is that you really have to work on yourself and your motivations to ensure you have near zero self-interest in offering help to others, so to speak. And I think that motivation, your intention, is really the important feature in anything that you do, the thoughts that you think, and the actions that you undertake. But I don't think you need to worry about having zero service to self in your actions, because that's almost impossible. When you intend to do something, I think that really is the most important thing. The intention is the foundation upon which any action or thought or deed is built. And as Ross said, we only need to be 51% in service to others in order to be graduated. There are other densities, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth, where we will be able to refine our ability to be of service to others. So I don't think it's something we need to be overly concerned about. What we need to be concerned about is just keeping track of our motivations and our desire to be of service to others. It's really not that difficult. We just have to do more service to others than we do service to self.
And Ra also said that it's actually necessary to love yourself as well, to be harmful.
Right.
Yeah.
So how does that factor in?
Well, that's where it all starts. In loving yourself, you're loving everybody because you and everybody are one. You have got to learn to love one person that you know good and well is imperfect, and that's you. As a basis for being able to love others unconditionally, it starts with how you feel about yourself. It's not selfish to love yourself. Certainly it would be selfish to love yourself if you decided that since you love yourself so much, you need to reward yourself with, you know, 72 virgins and, you know, whatever. But most people aren't like that, we hope. And it's part of, one of the earliest parts of becoming a magical person is to fall completely in love with yourself and forgive yourself for all the stupid things that you've done. Because at that point, you have become able to see beyond the stupid things people do to the essence within. You know that that person is a spark of God. You know that that person is part of you. So when you're working with the other person, you really can't have any more judgment of being stupid than you have of yourself for being stupid. I mean, it's too bad to be stupid, and you try not to do that. But you do that. I'm reminded of what Ross said when they were talking about why they picked us. And they said that they had been looking for a couple of centuries for a channel and a support group for the channel that had pure intentions, basically. And they had found us, and they were grateful. Or what do they say? In our memory, we thank you, or something like that. And what they were trying to say is, yeah, these are imperfect people. Yeah, their quality of, you know, is not perfect. They have service to other stuff going on that they're trying to work to lessen. But, you know, if your goal is to lessen distortion, I don't think it can ever be to eliminate distortion, because we never will, not in this density with all of these illusions going on. The only way you stop having a partial service to self side, I think, is by entering into some, you know, going into the woods and praying and not doing anything else. And we don't do that. We live in a world of action. We live in a world of bring home the groceries and pay the bills and, you know. Anyway, my point being, heaven knows we're anything but perfect, Jim and me and Don. And yet we were gifted with the most incredible, communication. That conversation that Don had with Roz is a wonderful gift, and we're so grateful. But in no way, shape, or form can you look at that and say, well, see, you guys are just well-nigh perfect. Uh-uh, no.
So it's okay to love yourself as long as it's not at the exclusion of loving others, would you say?
Well, I think that it's fine to love yourself, and it is a way through which you learn to love others. Mickey, I know you've got something to say. You keep putting your phone up to your... What is it?
When you are of service to others, since you are the creator, then you also benefit. It's not necessarily because you wish to be of service to yourself. A service to yourself seems to be part of the fruit that comes back to you. I think, like Jesus said, if you cast bread upon the waters, it returns to you tenfold and more. So this is just part of the way the illusion works. And when you're able to accept yourself and love yourself, it's not at the exclusion of others or not at the expense of others. It's rather a preparation in order to spread that love to others. So I think this is just the way things work. We're the creator too. So as we intend to serve others, then whether we intend to serve ourselves or not, it just comes back to us.
You really can't help it. I mean, and you certainly aren't sitting there thinking, well, I'm going to do this good deed, and 10 years from now, this person is going to write me and tell me I made a difference in her life. You're not doing it like that. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine doing that. You're just doing it because your ethics tell you that this is what a good person would do. And there's really no attachment to anything but just trying to do the best you can to offer offer your day to the Creator as just the most spirit-filled day that you can. And, you know, Jim and I ask every morning, please, Spirit, be with us and show us the way, because we certainly don't know it.
So to anyone who might be concerned that they might be benefiting by helping others, then I guess we could say the differentiation between loving oneself and that being an STS, you know, love of self, versus just benefiting from loving others and loving yourself as kind of a benefit of that or a bonus. In other words, it's really the focus then.
Right.
In other words, focus. Okay. All right. I think that clears that up. We're going to go to the next question. Is from Talon. Greetings, Carla and Jim. First of all, I'd like to thank you for all you do. It is much appreciated. I would like to ask, what are your thoughts on using LSD as a way to expand your spiritual journey? I've done a lot of research online, and it seems to me this is an acceptable tool for the seeker to use. I've not used it yet, but I know during your contact with Ra, you have used it and was wondering what your thoughts were on this. What would you suggest to one who wants to be in contact with their higher self but lacks the meditation discipline? Thank you from Talon.
Okay, Talon. what I think about this. Well, first of all, let me share with people who might be listening or who might be reading later my use of LSD. When I was in the middle of the Ra contact, a friend of mine had some really good LSD. He'd never tried it. I'd never tried it, and we agreed that we would try it. Well, I tried it twice, and it didn't do anything for me. I might as well have taken water. So from the personal point of view, you know, it was hard for me to see what damage it would do. And yet the Ra group reported that because I had done this, I had taken a lot of my energy, and it was no longer available. I used up a lot of energy. Now, the reason that I'd used it up was I felt very energized. That was the only thing that I can say it was really a result of it. And my desk, which typically had 3 to 6 months of business piled up that I just hadn't gotten to yet, I cleaned it up completely in a couple of days, the couple of days that I tried the one and then the other LSD. Other than that, I did not experience any enlightenment or anything different than my regular vision would show, or it was just nothing there. Now, I'm not saying that that's yay or nay. I'm just saying you asked me about my experience, and that was it. When Ra scolded me about it, he didn't precisely scold. He just said, well, you know, you've taken your energy, and you're low on energy anyway, so it was too bad. So you know, I had to go through a two-month period, was it?
Right. The sessions in book two are much shorter because you didn't have the energy that you normally would have had due to the draining effect of the LSD.
And that was, you know, what Ross said is what they consider to be a somewhat unfortunate thing, and I did too. So basically I was sorry that I'd done it, but of course once you've done it, you know, you've done it. And, you know, you can ask for experiential witnessing. I think Mick used LSD during that time. We'll say that it was the hippie generation. It was when I was young, was precisely at the point where all this stuff was being dropped, and Timothy Leary was big, and Ram Dass was huge, and so forth. And so, you know, that was, it was floating around. It was out there. It made people curious about it. Jim's experiences were about equally sorted between good and horrible, right?
Well, in 1970, quite a while before I met you, I had an LSD trip, and one of the realizations I had was something that stayed with me since, that is, if you want the world to treat you well, treat the world well. And so I was pondering that as I was on the trip. And then this voice came from somewhere inside my head, and it said, "You don't have to be stoned to be here." And I remembered that. And then I remembered what Ross said about taking drugs in order to achieve spiritual realizations was much like the hitchhiker on the road who is dependent upon the somebody else driving the car in order to get where they wish to go. And you may or may not come in contact with a helpful source because you are not the one who's driving the car. The drug is driving the car. So it's not a dependable source, and it's a source that will eventually drain your vital energy. The combination of your mind, your body, and your spirit is that which goes together to make your vital energy. So I think there are various cultures that have used the sacred mushrooms, peyote, and so forth, with the very strict set intention of receiving spiritual information and enlightenment. And so I know that it has been done in other cultures. I just think that it's a difficult thing to do when it's not a part of the culture in which you have been raised. And in our culture, we just don't really know how to use drugs in that fashion. And so I think it's an unreliable source of energy for the spiritual seeker.
And I think that a lot of times you can receive truth that when you're sober, you can't handle. That the truth, you know, does everything but set you free if you're not ready to embrace it, if you're not ready to stand there and be it and have that be a positive experience, and it can turn difficult. So basically, I would say that my thoughts on using LSD as a way to expand on your spiritual journey are that it's a dubious thing at best, and there are a lot of dangers involved with setting yourself out like that. I mean, imagine if you got caught on video phone communication with somebody who wouldn't let you go. They wouldn't let you go and wouldn't let you go. And slowly the drug wears out and he still wouldn't let you go, and boom, you break a hole in the aura that surrounds your electrical body. A lot of people that have come through the group have had holes in their auras that cause them a lot of difficulty. And healing the hole in the aura is it's a slow process, and you can do it over time. I think there are readings that are on that in the Raw sessions, so you might Google it and see what the Raw group has to say about that. But if your choice is free, I would say no. Just do the best you can sober, because that's good enough for the Creator. It's good enough for your seeking and your finding the Creator. Realize that it's frustrating when you're trying to meditate and you lack the discipline necessary to keep on it, and you keep falling out of meditation and starting to think about something. I've done that all my life. I've never really shaken that. A couple of times I've been in groups that were really powerful, and I was able to surf on their energy and just focus on that and not think of anything else but this wonderful trip I was having because I was sitting in the circle. But other than that, I am constantly telling myself, get back in the meditation, you know, stop thinking about this, let it go. Let it go, please. And it might not be anything more than, you know, the menu for next week. But whatever it is, it pulls you out of one mind and takes you to the other, the mind of the head rather than the mind of the heart. Meditation is done to seek the mind of the heart. And when you started thinking about menus, you're thinking about the intellectual mind. I can't say that it would happen that way for you. You might have great luck with it. But I can say that I would not recommend it. It's a risky business to seek a more spiritual essence with a substance. It's so much better to seek from within your own efforts. And you may think that you're failing, but if you'll just keep at it, a year and a couple of years, you know, you look back on how things have gone and how things have changed, how your reactions to things have changed, and you realize, wow, something must have worked, something must have helped. And you become just, you know, I'll have to deal with this for the rest of my life. You know, that's the way I feel about it. I'm just never probably going to be a great meditator. Okay, but the intention is so important that it doesn't matter how well you do at fulfilling that intention. If you're just trying, and then you find out that you've dropped out and you're thinking about something else and you go back into the silence, and you spend your meditation time basically doing this, it still will give you a wonderful gift and will move you forward on your ability to perceive the Creator in the world around you and in each other, and most of all, I think, in yourself.
Well, Carla, I think you know this already, but you are unique. quite special in the sense I've never heard of anybody taking LSD and not experiencing anything. That's amazing. Wow. One more area that you are special. And Jim, even your experience sounds kind of mild compared to what I have witnessed. It seems that taking LSD can be kind of like playing Russian roulette. You know, I've witnessed people either seeing God or believing they understood the secrets of the universe, and then at other times feel that they'd been sent to hell and they saw all kinds of demons and all their inner demons were unleashed. So it seems like it could be, or I've seen it be, from one extreme to another. So I guess there's a variety of experiences. I wanted to mention, if anybody would like to pursue this topic further, there is an excellent discussion at bringforth.org, bring4th.org. Go to forum number one, Life on Planet Earth, and then there's a thread called The Spiritual Use of, now I never know how to pronounce this word, entheogens or entheogens, something like that. Okay.
Like that.
Yeah, it's actually not in dictionary.com, so I couldn't actually find out how to pronounce that word. But that thread, there's a lot of people discussing their experiences with LSD and other hallucinogens, and some negative, some positive. So it might be a good idea to see what other people have experienced as well. There's some very good discussion there. Okay, I think we have time for just one more question. This is from Dark Light. And Dark Light starts with a quote from Session 11.8. Questioner, is there anyone in our history who is commonly known who went to a fourth density self-service or negative type of planet, or who will go there? I am Ra. The number of entities thus harvested is small. However, a few have penetrated the eighth level, which is only available from the opening up of the seventh through the sixth. Penetration into the eighth or intelligent infinity level allows a mind-body-spirit complex to be harvested, if it wishes, at any time space during the cycle. Back to Dark Light. Question, how can a third density being know that he or she has penetrated intelligent infinity? This is for the negative path, but I believe it's also for the positive path. And what is meant by the eighth level?
Okay, well, let's tackle the eighth level first, because it's a way of saying that there is an energy point, say that in the seventh level, which is the violet ray. The violet ray is the largest part of a flame, and when it comes together again, the way you're looking at a match and you see that the flame is pointed on top, right? When it comes together again, there is the gateway to intelligent infinity, and it's sometimes called the white chakra or the white energy center, but it's a position along the body, about slightly above the body, that creates for you that communion, that gateway, where you can then, according to your intention, choose something from their menu of offerings, you know, healing, teaching, dancing, writing, oh, all the things that belong to the spiritualized life. And then, you see, you have to move back down into the world. You can move back down as far as the green ray and just try to stay in the green ray in regular day-to-day life and try to act upon that which you've gained by going through the gateway. I think that when you have done so, you won't have to ask if you've done so. As long as you wonder if you've done so, you haven't. That doesn't mean that you're far away from it, but it just means it's a mechanical thing, really. It's saying that, you know, you have the ability and the focus and the energy to move completely through the gateway into the gateway to intelligent infinity. And there's that point of it. Let's see. I think that in service to others, people, even if they can go on, they tend to choose not to go on because they want to help the rest of the people on this planet achieve realization or achieve a 51% service to others rating, however you want to put it. Mick, you had something.
I think that the eighth level of intelligent infinity that, like Carla said, that when you've experienced it, then you know that you've experienced it. It's what Ra called the fully experienced presence of the one infinite creator, where you've been able to achieve union with the creator and with all that is. So that and then Ra also said that produces the natural fruit of joy and the desire to share this joy and realization with others. Again, as Carla said, the desire to come back and to help others achieve this same union is what is the real fruit of the process.
I have, throughout my life, I have had, usually it's just moments, it's just 30 seconds or a minute. Sometimes it's been, you know, 3 days, but the usual is for a much shorter time. I have been in either intelligent infinity or intelligent energy, and I was either looking at the light, glorying in the light, or I was the light. And I think, you know, when you are the light, then you've probably gotten into the eighth level. But I have no clue as to how I get there. It happens spontaneously, and it's frustrating because I have these wonderful realizations, and I try to bring them back, and it's just nothing I can do to share this with anybody. I read in the Bible that Paul was disgusted with himself for doing glossolalia, or, you know, speaking in tongues, and he was sad that he couldn't do it for other people, and I think he decided to stop doing it because he felt that it was too selfish. You know, it was helping him, but it wasn't helping anybody else, and he was very practical-minded. He was goal-oriented, I guess you'd say, and he wanted to help his people, just like we do. I mean, Jim and I both feel, and we'll feel this until the day we die, that there are people there, you know, in the world that identify themselves as people that are seekers that enjoy our material, and we want to be there for them. So it's not, you know, when I have achieved that, you know, I haven't even thought about moving on. My whole idea is to come back and share it with people, with all the people that, you know, might be able to appreciate our work. And, you know, I have no attachment as to whether people do like our work or not. That would be silly. I just want to make it available. And if people find it helpful, then that lifts me up. I just can't tell you how that just brings me to a feeling of joy. I have certainly felt more joy in my life than most, I think. And that has nothing to do with my physical situation. It has strictly to do, I think, with the place that I really want to be. And I spend a lot of time getting there when I have fallen down and lost that wonderful feeling of joy. And it's something that you can do for yourself. You need to find out what's inspiring to you. And then when you, you know, perceive yourself as not being the person that you know you are and that you'd like to be, express, you know, outwardly to be, and you start seeking after that, then I think help comes to those who seek it. You know, there's nothing more important than setting your intention, whether it's for the day or for the lifetime or for the moment. Intentions are utterly apparent over
No.
Uh-oh, I lost you, Carla. Can't hear you.
I don't know, something's happening. I can't hear
you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Jim.
This
but
happened
Carla
last
sounds
week
like
to Carla, too. Her phone just clicked off on her last week about the same time.
I didn't notice anything last week. She sounded fine. Yeah. Hmm. Well, good thing we're almost at the end.
Right.
You want to relay to us what she just said that we missed, just the last couple of sentences?
Well, she was just saying that how intentions are really the most important thing in order to determine whether, you know, an action has been successful or not, and whether it's something you'd like to repeat. So, again, you know, intentions are really, they color everything that we do. And all, that's all you can do here, because we don't understand, really, anything for sure. All we can do is intend to do our best to be of service and to seek the Creator.
Okay, we have one question left, but we're going to have to keep it for next week, and because we're just about out of time. So I just have one quick follow-up question to what you just said. Jim, or Carla, if you can relay this, or whoever wants to answer this, do you have a quick word of advice to someone who, I have a friend who just lost a pet, and he was calling out for help, and he's feeling very down right now because he felt that he was seeking but not receiving any answer. Because you just, Carla, you just mentioned how you seek. The help comes to those who seek. What about when you're seeking and you're crying out with all your heart and soul and you feel like you're not getting any answer? How do you hang on to faith in a case like that?
Well, it becomes more difficult then, but that's when you really do need to continue to seek and to have faith, because eventually that seed of faith will produce fruit. Sometimes we have to work harder than at other times. It's not something that can be predicted. All we can do, as I said before, is just to intend and to keep at it, to keep seeking, and to open ourselves to a result, to open ourselves to the bread that comes back after we've cast ours upon the waters. It's the best we can do. And sometimes we feel forlorn and orphaned, but it's at that time that we're really tested the most. We need to be faithful to keeping ourselves open and to having that faith. Just keep on keeping on.
Do you think we're being tested by the universe to see if we have faith? Or is it just something like a muscle you have to exercise?
I don't think it's necessarily the universe. I mean, it could be in that you identify with the universe, so you could say, yeah, it's the universe testing you. But I think we provide these tests for ourselves. We hope that by having what might be called an ordeal, that we will be able to become a stronger spiritual seeker. And sometimes in this third density life, the ordeals that we've provided for ourselves seem a bit much. But if we just stay the course, we will come out on the other side shining with light.
Okay, thank you, Jim and Carla. This, you've been listening to In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. Check out the websites, llresearch.org, and bringforth.org, bring4th.org. We're here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We will be here next week, October 12th. Feel free to ask your questions at bringforth.org or call in live. We'd love to have you call in live. See you next week.